As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
I'm the Mighty Manfred here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage with your coolest conversations podcast. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. My guest today is Eddie Spaghetti, frontman and bass player in the long-running band The Super Suckers, who've been at it since 1988. And their latest album is called Play That Rock and Roll, which features their coolest song in the world, Ain't Gonna Stop Till I Stop It. I'll play some of that now, followed by my interview with Eddie Spaghetti on Your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Manfred with your coolest conversations, and I'm very honored today to be speaking with Eddie Spaghetti, bass player, lead vocalist in the Super Suckers. How are you, Eddie?
Good, Manfred. How are you, man?
Excellent. Very happy to be chatting with you. Now, I read that the band formed in Tucson, Arizona back in 1988 as the Black Super Suckers. Are you from Tucson originally?
Yeah, that's where I grew up, and, we flipped a coin to see if we'd go to New Orleans or Seattle. And Seattle won, so we really spent most of our career in Seattle. But we did start the band in Arizona.
Wow, so Seattle or New Orleans. Man, New Orleans has got a lot of charms there. I think it would have been pretty hard on your liver, maybe. But clean living up in Seattle.
I don't think we'd still be alive if we had gone to New Orleans. But it wasn't much better in Seattle, I'll tell you that. It was rough a little while there.
That's true. Yeah, but so were you aware that in Seattle, 9 months of the year, it seems like there's no sun at all?
That was the appeal, really, was, the fact that you could wear your leather jacket into June in Seattle. And in Arizona, you were lucky to get like a month with that thing on. So it was a welcome transition, the weather.
So was there much music when you were growing up in your home? Did your parents play instruments or not, or...?
No, they don't really. They never played instruments, but there was always a lot of records around. And I remember lots of disco parties as a young kid and enjoying hearing all the music that they would play and sneaking into their room and listening to the Commodores record or Some Girls by the Stones, and just being captivated by the whole thing.
So was bass guitar your first instrument?
No, it was. I first learned how to play the guitar, I figured out some chords and started making up songs immediately. I was never interested in being like a virtuoso guitar player, so the bass was a pretty natural switch for me. When I realized I was as a young teenager, wanted to play in a band, and every band needed a bass player. There was no cool one, so I decided to be the cool bass player.
Well, so you start playing bands as a teenager. Was there some epiphany? Was there some moment where you decided, man, making rock and roll, that's what I'm going to do from here on out?
Sure. My moment came before I ever picked up an instrument, though. I knew when I heard My Sharona by The Knack, I was 100% convinced that this is what I need to do. I'm still trying to make up my Sharona. I get closer every time, but so far it still eludes me.
So when you signed your soul over to Beelzebub, were your parents present for that, or because you were a minor, or not?
Yeah, they were supportive, actually. So, you know, I was really lucky. All I had to do was keep my grades up in school, and I could go play in the nightclubs during the week. So it worked out really well for me. My parents were super supportive, you know.
Wow, that's very cool. So now, early on, you guys had like a two-guitar attack going on. The last couple of albums, you've been a trio. Are you liking it better as a trio?
Yeah, you know, and I never thought that I would. I always thought it would feel empty and you know, vacant in spots, but it's because Marty is so good. Yeah. And the band is so solid now, and we all know what decisions need to be made in order to make it sound right. I think the band is better than it's ever been.
Well, let's talk about the new album, Play That Rock and Roll. It's been out a week now. It's on Acetate Records. When and where did you record it?
We recorded it in, I guess it was, you know, last year at some point around summertime. We recorded at Willie Nelson's studio, Pedernales, just outside of Austin.
Did he drop by while you were recording?
No, fucker. he threatened to at one point. Yeah, we thought we might have a Willie signing, but he didn't. So a missed opportunity. I've had the pleasure of hanging out with Willie Nelson before, and it's always a good time.
I was wondering too, you mentioned hanging out with him. Have you ever had a chance to play with him at all?
Yeah, we actually backed him up on the Tonight Show. You can Google that shit up.
When was that?
Oh, in the 90s. Must have been 96, maybe, something like that. It was, it was a long time ago, back in the 1900s.
Well, I think, Willie Nelson, obviously very cool guy, and it's even cooler to know that you guys are playing with him, you know? That's sort of his stock with me. If it could go up any, it's going up even more. How did you guys ever hook up with him?
Well, we hooked up with him through this guy who was putting together a tribute record. He's the guy who wound up recording our country record that we did in the 90s, Must Have Been High. This guy, Randall Jamail, knew the Nelson family really well and got him to come in the studio with us when we recorded Bloody Mary Morning for this Twisted Willie tribute record that came out around that time. And Willie decided to promote it, and that's why he asked us to come and do the Tonight Show with him, because he enjoyed hanging out with us so much. And, having him in the studio was so freaking cool, man. It was, you know, just a mind-blowing experience for a young man.
Absolutely. So the song Ain't Gonna Stop off the new album is this week's coolest song in the world. Who wrote the tune?
I did.
Gonna Stop. That seems like somebody asking, giving you the question, like, or a lecture, like, when are you going to grow up, or when are you going to quit this? Is that the genesis of the song, or how'd you come up with the idea?
Yeah, that's the whole idea of it. You know, it's just obvious. There's no real hidden meaning here or any of my shit, you know. So I'm actually trying to be as obvious as I can anymore with the songs, and the more simple they are and the more fun they are to play, the better they stand up over time. And just kind of rediscovering that with this record, and I feel like this record in particular is like a love letter to all the kind of rock and roll music that I really like.
So, you know, that's this thing that people would say to me when I've played in bands, and I guess the way I answer that now is, hey, man, it's all jazz, you know? I mean, it's like those jazz guys in the 60s still cutting great records, but the audiences were smaller. They're back to people putting them up in houses and stuff. Does it matter if rock and roll is thought of as old man music?
Yeah, it matters. That's a downside of doing something for a long time, I suppose, is that, yeah, you eventually, if rock and roll has become jazz, you know, it's for older people and it's for fewer people, and it doesn't resonate with kids like I think it ought to, because even kids today, they want to learn all the same hard rock licks that I wanted to learn when I grew up, you know, but that hasn't really changed, except for that it's not the kind of music they really like, I guess. You know, it doesn't, rock and roll doesn't resonate with kids, and I guess that's the natural order of things. And finally, my kid is listening to music I don't like, and it makes me feel like an old fart, but I guess that's what I am, you know. I gotta embrace it.
Right.
But who knows?
Well, a couple of other favorite tracks of mine on the album, You Ain't the Boss of Me and The Last Time Again. Now, those are tunes you wrote as well?
Yep.
So what is the writing process in the band? Do you make demos and bring them to the other guys to learn, or you meet all together in a practice space and kind of go through stuff?
We do a little bit of all of that. You know, there's most of the songs I make up, and I do a little voice recording with the phone nowadays. Everything's on the phone now, so even how, you know, you're gonna hear this music through your phone probably, so you just gotta get used to that. But so I'll make up an acoustic and vocal demo of it and show it to the guys, and then we'll book some time before we go in the studio and get together, because we all live in different cities. So
okay,
there's no like, hey, let's get together on Tuesday and jam. Nobody wants to do that anyway in this band. We're done with that, you know. So we get together and, you know, knock our heads together and make up a few more and have enough for a record.
Well, you do a couple of cool covers on the new album, including one that's a hidden track or unlisted track, a version of A Certain Girl that Ernie K. Doe, the Emperor of the Universe, first did back in like 1961. The Yardbirds covered it 3 years later. How did you come to the song?
We came to it through the Warren Zevon version. A friend of ours suggested it to us, basically. She said, you guys should do this song. And Marty brought it in, and I was like, yeah, we could totally do that song. That sounds like something that would be kind of right up our alley.
Right. Well, why is it an unlisted track?
Oh, because it sounds so different. We didn't really think we were going to put it on the record at all, but everybody liked it so much, we had to fit it on there somehow. And by then, I had already kind of decided on the sequencing and how this record was going to be. It was 10 songs. It was perfect. And yeah, now it's 11. It's a little goofy. I don't know.
So no, man. No. You took it to 11.
Yeah, we did. We took it to 11.
So back in 2015, you were diagnosed with throat cancer. How is your health these days?
I'm all good. Yeah. I have one more visit, and then I think I'll be declared officially cancer-free.
Yeah, man. Well, years ago, what is it, off the, how do you say the name of the album? La Mano Cornuda, you have a tune,
yes.
Creepy Jackalope Eye, and right at the top of the song, it sounds like there's a bit of a Rudy Ray Moore bit going on there, where he's saying a couple of things. Are you a Rudy Ray Moore fan?
Yeah, we were really into him at the time we were making that record. I think we had a VHS of Dolomite that we watched, I don't know, maybe 250 times, and we had a couple of his records, and yeah, it just totally lifted that. I think that's the beginning of one of his records. This album is dedicated to the good fuckers and those who want to be good fuckers.
Well, yeah. I'm a fan myself, and I was wondering if you saw that Eddie Murphy movie where he portrays him.
I did. I liked that movie quite a bit. I thought he did a really good job.
Man, I'm right there with you. I thought that was really great, you know, trying to portray somebody that's larger than life. That's always a difficult thing, and I thought he did a great job.
Yeah,
hey, you did an Outlaw Cruise recently. Outlaw Country is our sister channel here on Sirius XM. Have you ever done one of those before?
Yeah, we have. This will be our third one. I guess we're back by popular demand. They didn't have us on last year, and I guess all the cruisers rose such a stink they had to ask us back. So
how does that work? I mean, I've never been on a cruise or any of these music cruises. How does that work? I mean, you play once a day, or do you have to play a couple of times a day, or just once and then you can hang out on the boat the rest of the time? How does that work?
Yeah, it varies each time. The first time we did it, I think we did like four different gigs, and this time there's only two for the band, and I have an extra one. And
as this airs, you're right now you're in the UK. You play tonight, Newcastle upon Tyne. You've got plenty of European dates going on till April. When are you touring again in the States?
We'll be back in the States hitting it hard in May. I can't remember where we start. I think it might be in Arizona or something like that. But yeah, we'll be everywhere this year.
That's mad. So I was looking at the Euro dates, and it's, you know, it's bam, 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 one night after another. You guys have been doing this a long time, but that's a rough schedule to keep. How many shows you plan on doing this year?
We'll probably do well over 200, probably closer to 250. Yeah, we don't take a lot of time off, and when we're on the road, we just keep going. I don't know how we do it, to tell you the truth. It's kind of a miracle.
Well,
in our advanced ages, you know.
Yeah,
we don't feel that old though. We just happen to be.
Well, so I know that in younger days I would play shows, and dude would be like, "Come crash in my house," and we might stay up a long time. But these days it's like, yes, let's, you know, setting up where we're going to stay ahead of time, and then getting back to wherever it is and just going straight to sleep, you know. Then
yeah, that's for sure. It's we don't mess around much after the shows anymore, you know. There's just it's straight to the hotel and back at it tomorrow, because, you know, it's for us, there's always going to be another gig tomorrow. For people around you, you know, it's a special event, and they want to hang on to you as long as they can, but you just, you know, can't get involved in all that.
No, not and make the next gig.
And then you're staring at 14 more straight dates without a day off, you know, and you gotta maintain.
That's it. Well, the other track off the new album that we can take a listen to now is Dead, Jail, or Rock and Roll. You know, Michael Monroe did that first. His version is on his solo album, Not Faking It. Why cover that tune?
Oh, because that's just such a great rock and roll song. You know, it fits all my criteria of my favorite songs. My favorite songs are rock and roll songs about rock and roll, with rock and roll right in the title. So this is an undiscovered gem, I felt like, you know. But, and I felt like somehow it just needed to be legitimized by, like, a real rock and roll band like the Super Suckers. You know, we have we could put a stamp of approval on something that people might have felt a little weird about, because, you know, it's from the 80s, and it's kind of, you know, Mike Monroe has a reputation as a glam rocker, and I just want to say I'm all for Mike Monroe and Hanoi Rocks, and I love the glam rock, and I wish we were more glam rocky, I suppose.
Well, it's not too late. You know, I don't know how you get a cowboy hat, though, over your those moosed up bangs, though.
Right, I know. I'm going to have to get some, do some hair research.
Well, if you didn't have rock and roll as an option, which of the other two do you think would have been your fate?
Oh, those three? Oh, neither. No, I'm definitely never going to go to either one of those places in East Studio that I have to.
Well, would it have been a different kind of music? Would it have been bluegrass?
Oh, God, no. I don't know. I hated country music when I was a kid, so it was definitely rock and roll or nothing for me as a kid. Of course, I got older and started loving country music, so now we actually play it. But, yeah, I don't know. If I didn't have rock and roll, I would have done something else completely different, you know. I would have been another sort of thankless, paying too little job.
Maybe you would have had a haberdashery, like a chapeau shop.
What size are you? Do you have that in black?
Eddie, thank you so much again for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It's cool that you guys are digging the tune.
Absolutely.
We sure are proud of it. So, you know, we hope everybody likes it. We wish everybody liked it. You know, we wish it was nationwide, global shit happening for us, but, you know, we'll take what we can get. We appreciate the love.
Well, right, and you know, with satellite radio, it is a nationwide, you know, so there are people picking up on it that maybe not were familiar with the guys before. That's definitely part of the plan here. You know,
that's right.
We're going to take a listen now to Dead, Jail, or Rock and Roll off the new album, Play That Rock and Roll. It's the Super Suckers in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Choices I ever came to find. Whoa!
jail, or rock and roll. That's the Super Suckers here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And the track is on their latest album, Play That Rock and Roll. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Eddie Spaghetti for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Next week, join me when I speak with Elliot Easton. He was a lead guitar player in The Cars, and now he's the lead string bender in The Empty Arts. They have a new single out, and we'll talk all about it on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.